It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Live it off the wall. Where you give the best sports talk and info in New York.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you gotta be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody.
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
And welcome, everyone, to another Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. I am Chris Sheeran. We'll hear from Joe Auriemma in just a bit, but right now we have a special guest on the phone, former Major League pitcher, Mr. Jim Cott. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
And you were able to call Steven Strasburg's first game for MLB Network. Jim, your first impressions of how good he was in that game?
Well, it is not very often that the event overshadows the hype, or at least lives up to it, and this went well beyond it. I just had never seen a 21-year-old kid with four outstanding pitches, fastball almost 100, a four-seam fastball, a sinking fastball in the mid to high 90s, a knee-buckling curve, a great changeup, and then with all the advanced hype and the pressure that was on him, there's no way I could have expected that kind of performance. It was very impressive.
Now, a 21-year-old, as you said, with all that hype and all that buildup, what do you think is going through his head when he goes out there? Is he just thinking, oh my God, I can't be bad here. I have to be good.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for youth, even though there's inexperiences. I think there's no fear. And I saw him kind of grinning with pitching coach Steve McCaddy on their way down to the bullpen to warm up. He never seemed uptight or rushed. You know, he worked at a very fast, rhythmic pace. The game was played 2 hours and 19 minutes. There was no stress or indecision whatsoever. Now, whether he's going to be able to maintain that or whether that was one of these first time I'm going to be as relaxed as possible, but I don't think he could have handled it any better. I know he couldn't have.
Well, Joe West would love the time of that game, but that's a conversation for another day. How about this, Jim? How about the fact that a lot of people, not experts, because experts were right on about this kid, hit the nail right on the head, but the casual fan might be saying, yeah, but he did it against the Pirates. They're still a major league team, though, right, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any other pitcher that struck out 14 and didn't walk anybody. You're right; they're the best hitters he's ever faced. So that's always a fallback line from the skeptics. But they are still in the big leagues, and everybody isn't beaten up on them. So I think you have to give him credit, and obviously, you want to wait and see if he does it over a period of time. Like, you know, Mike Leake is off to this tremendous start.
He
doesn't have the electric stuff that Strasburg does, but he's a great all-around athlete, and he's gotten off to a great start. So he wasn't just a one-game wonder, and I think now that's what everybody's gonna wait and see, whether he can back this up. And, of course, the Nationals have him on a very strict regimen in terms of how many innings he'll pitch and how many pitches he'll throw. So we may only see him for another five or six starts.
Right. SI.com, I was just going to bring that up next. They said that they'll be shutting him down after the All-Star break. Not completely, but he's not going to start every fifth day. Do you think that's the right move with a 21-year-old that has this kind of stuff?
I'm never in favor of any of that, but yet I know what managers and pitching coaches are. The orders that come down from on top because of the money invested. I mean, I would love to get in a room with the people that make those decisions and find out if they've ever pitched or had anything to do with training pitchers, because it makes no sense to me, but it's the world we live in, and managers and pitching coaches have to abide by it. I mean, can you imagine Jim Riggleman, if the Nationals, they just swept the Pirates, if all of a sudden they got hot and they were in contention for, say, a wild card spot, and here's a kid that's tearing up the league, and then they say, well, it's too bad. He's not going to pitch anymore this year. That would be pretty devastating to the fans and to the ball club as well.
Hey, Jim, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hi, Joey.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Jim, I watched the game. I listened to, your call of it. And really, he just has absolutely filthy stuff. I mean, I've never seen a pitcher this young have 3 to 4 out pitches where, I mean, he can throw that four-seam fastball for the out pitch. He can throw a curveball. He's got a great change. I mean, he was just mixing speeds, and that's really uncommon for a guy that's, unproven and really was the first pick of the draft just last year.
You know, it's uncommon for anybody. I was working the game with John Smoltz, and John probably had as close to that kind of electric stuff from a right-hander. You know, he had more than just fastball and curveball. I think John would mix in a split, a slider, and, he had a lot of put-away pitches too. But you think back to Doc Gooden, Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax, Roger Clemens. There were a lot of great, pitchers that had fastball, curveball, or one very dominant pitch. But I don't know anybody that has 4 pitches and at least the other night had that kind of command of them at such a young age. So I think that's why there was all the hype by the scouts, which they have proven to be accurate, that it was the most hyped-up baseball debut in the history of the game, and he lived up to it. So I'm very happy for him, and I hope he can sustain it.
Indeed he did. It's Chris again, Jim. And Joe and I have talked about this on the podcast before, and you brought up Nolan Ryan, and this will be my last one for you. While we have you here, I just want to see what you feel about this. You kind of alluded to it earlier in this discussion, but I want to go one step further. Now, Nolan Ryan, as we know, is taking over the Texas Rangers, and he wants his young pitchers to be able to pitch out of jams and actually pitch. He's not one that's going to pull these guys. He doesn't want his manager to pull the guys early in the game, Ron Washington. He wants them to actually go out there and pitch. And that's how you learn to get into situations and get out of situations like that, much like Phil Hughes for the Yankees, who was in the bullpen last year, and he came in with the bases loaded, came in with first and third and one out. Isn't that how you learn how to pitch, Jim?
Well, no question. I was very fortunate as a 19-year-old. I pitched for Jack McKeon in the minor leagues in Class C ball. And I pitched with the playoffs, I think, a little over 250 innings. And Jack would come out to the mound. I'd have a couple men on sixth or seventh inning, and he'd say, well, kid, figure out a way to get out of it. And, sometimes you would, sometimes you wouldn't, but as Warren Spahn told me in the early 60s, and Spahn, of course, still more wins than any left-hander in history, 363, gave me a pitching lesson and said, now, kid, let me tell you something. When the game is tied in the seventh inning, the game's just starting. And unfortunately, pitchers these days, they're very capable of doing it, but they're not allowed to kind of learn how to work out of those jams. And I miss that. It'd be nice for the starting pitcher to face the other team's star hitter in the eighth and ninth inning for a fourth time with the game on the line. That'd be a lot of fun to see.
South Amboy, New Jersey's own Jack McKeon. I've played at the field named for him many times, Jim, in my high school days. Jim, that's it for the Strasburg discussion. What we want to do now, we want to ask you what you're doing now besides Major League Baseball. When's your next game going to be on the network, and what are you doing these days?
Well, that's about all I'm doing. I mix in as much golf as I can, traveling around the country, and then I do at least 10 games, and maybe I'll do a couple more this year, because my next one is Tigers Mets on June 24, and then there's a possibility we'll do Minnesota Tampa on July 1st. So I'll already have done 7. So I have 3 months for 3 games. They may use me to do a few more, but it works out nice. I wouldn't mind doing a few more, but yet it gives me a lot of nice gaps in my schedule. We went over to Europe in May, over to Paris and Amsterdam. I worked with some of the Dutch pitchers over there while I was there, and so it allows me a chance to do a little travel at the same time.
And it's funny you bring up the Dutch heritage, Jim, because you are actually on the ballot for the best Dutch baseball player. That's going to be happening this month. It'll be announced on June 25th. I wasn't sure if you knew about this. The accredited media representatives are voting on this. And, Jim, you're one of a couple of baseball players being nominated, and I just want you to know your vote is safe with this reporter.
Well, that's great. I kind of, I would sort of think and hope that my good friend, and actually he was a little protege of mine when he came up as a kid, Bert Blyleven.
Absolutely.
Would probably, when that Bert was actually born over in Zeist, Holland. I'm of Dutch heritage, but I wasn't born there, but Bert was.
Don't try to sell me. You have my vote, Jim.
Okay.
I'm not voting for Bert. All right, Jim, listen, we really appreciate your time. It's always valued. Continued good luck. You are tremendous at what you do, and hopefully we'll hear you more down the line on Major League Baseball Network. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, no problem.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs on the web. It's The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Keeping Up with the Joneses with Kim Jones, River Ave Blues, and much, much more. For wall-to-wall Yankees, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
And we're back here on the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com with WFAN's Mets beat reporter, Ed Coleman. Ed, welcome to the program. We appreciate your time.
Chris, good talking to you as always. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great. Eddie, let's talk about the Mets. Not doing too bad this season. Coming off a one-hitter from John Neese last night, what do you get out of him after coming off the disabled list and throwing that gem last night?
Yeah, tremendous performance last night. One of the best in Mets history, really. It's hard to believe that it's John Neese. You know, a couple of starts off the disabled list, he's really been on his game. There's no question. Last night was simply astounding, really. We saw great pitching in both games. Matt Latos of San Diego was terrific in the other one, too. So, you know, Neese is the kind of guy who's capable of that. I don't know if anybody thought he'd kind of put it together this quickly, but he's thrown his curveball as well as you can, really, right now. That's his out pitch, and kind of setting up every other pitch that he has, and he's simply had the last two opponents really off balance. But the Mets are on the road, Chris, and that's always dangerous territory for them. They're down in Baltimore, so home has been one thing, road's been another.
Well, we'll see if they could get off the road schneid when they go down to Baltimore, as you just said. Now, at the beginning of the season, the Mets fans all over the place were saying we need number two starter. We have Johan, we have nothing else. But Mike Pelfrey, and now if John Neese could keep this up, the Mets are pretty set 1-3. Don't you agree with that?
I would, yeah. I still think they need a little more pitching myself. I still think they could use another solid, you know, innings type of starter in there who's, maybe not an ace, but a good pitcher. But I think the way it's broken out so far right now, you'd have to say that Mike Pelfrey's your ace, and Johan Santana is probably slotted in the number two spot right now. Santana's had very tough luck. But he hasn't pitched terribly. He just wasn't impressive the other day in the first game of the doubleheader.
Now, what do you think's been the problem with him, Eddie? I mean, was it last year when he went on the DL and with the problems? Was it his elbow last year?
Yeah, he had elbow surgery late in the season. August or September.
Do you think that's still bothering him maybe this year?
It's possible. It's hard to really put your finger on it because his fastball hasn't quite been there this year. And, in yesterday's game, he was, in the 80s a lot, high 80s or so. But he's usually snapping it at, 92, 93 when he's really on. Now, it could be just the phase that he's going through. It could be some dead arm period. He is not complaining about it. He says his arm feels fine. He's not the type to complain, though, and he's also the type of guy who's going to go out there and give you everything he has. He's a warrior, and that's why the Mets love him. And he's going to make his starts. I think he'll be okay this year. But Pelfrey has clearly slid into the ace role this year. He's been just been dominating. He's finally put it all together. I think he's got his confidence. He went home after last season, and he had had enough. It was 10-12 for him last year. He was very up and down, and everyone in this league who runs across him, has been asking me over the years that what's wrong with this guy? He's got all the tools, all the pitches. Why is he not winning? Well, a lot of it was you could say anxiety on the mound when he put runners on base. He'd get himself a little discombobulated and start to panic a little bit. Now he has no problem with that kind of stuff. He gets the double play ball when he needs it. He's got a split finger that he's using to great effect this year, and he has the confidence. He's just a different person this year. Great kid, and it's finally, you know, putting it all together. Going to be one of the top pitchers, I think, in the National League.
It's amazing what a little patience will do in the New York area. As we've often heard, Eddie, the New York sports fan is the most knowledgeable, but they're not the most patient a bunch out there. But Pelfrey and Phil Hughes both turning things around, and that's nothing but good news for the Mets to have Pelfrey finally figuring it out, as you just said. Now let's talk about another guy, a warrior, and that's David Wright. What has been, I hate to use, everybody uses this, but what has been wrong with David Wright at points this season? A lot of strikeouts. What do you think it is? Is he putting too much pressure on himself with Carlos Beltran out of the lineup and other people not doing the job, not with the power? Do you think he's doing something different?
Yeah, that's possible, Chris. You know, it's hard to say. Wright has been very streaky, much streakier than I can ever remember him being. We knew that when Jason Bay came over, he was going to be a streaky individual, and he has been. But you know, Wright has—he's had periods where he's hit very well for, you know, a couple of weeks, 10 games at a time. He's had other times where he can't even put his bat on the ball. So it's been frustrating. And one thing that's, I think, you know, bothered Jerry Manuel a little bit is the middle of his lineup not making contact. That's Bay, that's Wright in particular. Sometimes Frank Cor, who's now down in the lineup, but that's been a problem. You know, as long as you can put the ball in play, something good might happen. Let's put it that way. The opponent can make a mistake. You can get a base hit. When you strike out a lot, not a lot is going to happen. And it's been happening way too frequently to Wright this year. It's hard to explain. You watch his swing. Sometimes it's a little bit long, but there are other times when he's been fooled, in the same game by both the fastball and the breaking ball, which is rare for him. A lot of times guys will, be behind the fastball, ahead of the breaking ball, but not at the same time. Wright has had that problem this year, so it's been hard to figure exactly what's been wrong, but he's usually figured things out, too, and he's still been a very productive player, despite the fact he has a lot of strikeouts, but I think you've got to get those strikeouts down.
I have nothing but respect for the kid. I mean, he has the weight of the Mets on his shoulders, and I think he handles himself tremendously, as Derek Jeter does for the Yankees. Now, what about Jason Bay? Now, they brought him in here for, we could talk about the money, whatever. He's had some stretches this season where he's been not producing too, but he was tremendous against the Yankees. I think the Yankees actually kickstarted his season, as he was with the Red Sox, as he was to the Red Sox to the Yankees, he is with the Mets to the Yankees now. We'll see how he does when they come to the stadium later this month, actually next week. But what do you think Jason Bay's problems have been devoted to this season?
Well, I think he's probably, playing a lot like he has in the past. It's funny, when you get through Bay's seasons and you look at the numbers at the end of the season, they're usually there. I mean, he had a tremendous year last year.
Kind of like Teixeira.
Over 30 homers, over 100 RBIs, and he may be there this year. Well, he's not going to be over 30 homers. We know that. That Citi Field is probably taking care of that.
But, the cavern, that is Citi Field, yeah.
Yeah, one thing when he came here, and which I like to hear, too, from any player, he said he judges his success on how many runs he knocks in and how many runs he scores. He doesn't really care about home runs. Well, he's really not going to care about home runs this year, I think. But, he's still on pace, I think, with a little pickup here and there to do what he wants to do and get over 100 runs scored and 100 runs knocked in, although it's, he's going to have to go through a hot streak, but he usually does. He's just been a very streaky guy. A couple of days ago, I was talking to Jerry Manuel about him, and Manuel was watching him during batting practice, and Jerry takes pride in kind of figuring out guys' swings and what's good for them, what's bad for them, what bad habits they're falling into, and I haven't asked him afterwards, Chris, about, what did you see? Did you see something that you picked up? He says, nope. He says, I still don't know. It's 60 games into the season, and I still can't figure out.
Wow.
So,
wow.
I don't think that's a good sign, but, he's a guy that usually does it. You've got to keep him there in the middle of the lineup and hope for the best, but he does go through some dry periods and sat out the second game of the doubleheader yesterday, just took a little mental break, and we'll see how he does down here in Baltimore.
All right, well, the Yankees had Wally Pipp and Lou Gehrig. I think the Mets version is David Murphy and Ike Davis. The Mets kind of needed a slap in the face at a point during the season. Do you think, I don't want to say godsend, Eddie, but I'd like to say smack in the face. Has Ike Davis been a smack in the face for the Mets? like a wake up call?
I know what you're saying, Chris. I think, I'd have to say you're right on that. It's funny. I don't know if you can qualify David Murphy as Wally Pipp because he really never got a chance.
That's true too. Just me trying to be cute, Eddie. Yeah.
No, absolutely. You know, it's we've had that analogy too. Davis is a guy that easily could have broken camp with the Mets.
Right.
You know, he showed enough in spring training, but they wanted to get him more seasoning. And I always felt that he'd be with the team, but I thought it would be something more like, you know, around this time or July, you know, mm-hmm. sometime maybe after the All-Star break, not the beginning of the season.
Right.
But, you know, things happen, and things happen for a reason. Ike is the kind of guy when you're in the clubhouse, and this goes back to spring training, he just fits in. He just, you know, he doesn't look like a rookie. He doesn't act like a rookie. You know, he's a big kind of gangly type of kid, fits the position, at least what you think of, you know, very well. He plays defensively very well, and, you know, everyone likes him. He's just a very likable kid, and is just fit like a glove with this team very seamlessly. So they're very lucky in that sense. And think about it, Chris, you know, you're, like I said, 60 games into the season, and this happened, you know, maybe 10 or 15 games ago. He was a cleanup hitter, you know, put into the cleanup spot. He was a rookie. He wasn't even supposed to be with the team. He's your cleanup batter. And, you know, he really hasn't missed a beat. So they've been very fortunate with Ike Davis, no question.
Before we let you go, Eddie, just a couple of more. Any latest news on Carlos Beltran?
Well, he's playing an extended spring training games down in Florida. He is what he's doing is DHing. And if he gets a hit, yesterday he was 3-for-10. You know, he's basically batting every inning and getting as many at-bats as he can. He's running when he gets a hit, but not beyond first base.
Right.
So he's not pushing it at this point. He is taking fly balls in the outfield. It's still going to be a ways away. Some people say the All-Star break. I think it'll be before then, but it's still probably later than a lot of people would have liked. But he is coming back, and it's going to be very interesting when he gets here.
Angel Pagan has been playing well, yeah.
Yes, he has. He's been playing very well. And Frank Coor is now picking up at the plate, too. And, you know, you're going to have 4-for-3. So that's a good thing, I guess, for Jerry Manuel. But trying to keep everybody happy is something else. You know,
right.
There's no question that Angel is going to want to play and play a lot. And so is Frank Coor. And I'm sure that, you know, Beltran will when he gets back here, too. But, you know, the good thing is they're going to have to rest him a little bit. You know, in a 3-game series, he's probably only going to play 2 games. That's just my guess at this point. I don't think he's going to be ready to go every day. We'll see what he's like, but you do get a good bat back. There's no question about that. It's like getting a good trade midseason.
Absolutely. And since you brought up trade, just 2 more quick ones for you. We talked about earlier, Eddie, about maybe getting solidifying the pitching a little bit. Any trade rumors along the pitching lines for the Mets?
Well, you know, the Mets are looking and they're talking with a lot of people. I know the big names like Cliff Lee and Roy Oswalt are out there. I don't see the Mets going down that road simply from prospects and contracts and that. I do see them, you know, looking more at the Brett Myers, a guy who's going to go against the Yankees this weekend, and also you know, Kevin Millwood, who the Yanks have seen as well. The Mets will see, I think, this weekend too. So, you know, those kind of guys, you know, second level or B level, if you
right.
want to put it that way.
Right.
Not that they're not good pitchers, but you know, those kind of guys, I think they would like to, you know, free up and maybe get a guy in like that. I think, as I said at the top, you know, an innings eater kind of guy, a guy you can put out there, you know, is going to make a lot of starts. They had an interest in John Garland in the offseason, who just faced him yesterday. He's pitched well for San Diego, even though the Mets beat him. But, you know, he's a Southern California guy, and I think preferred to stay out there and sign with San Diego. But, you know, that type of pitcher, I think, if they could add another guy like that and they could really count on, I think it would help them a lot.
All right. Did you expect, this is the last one for you, and we really appreciate your time today, did you expect the NL East to be this competitive and to be this tight with the Braves, the Phillies, and the Mets all in the mix?
Not really. I did expect it to be a tough division because we saw the Braves an awful lot in spring training, and I knew if the kid Hayward took off that they had pitching and that they'd be a much better team. So in that sense, yes. As tight as it is, no, because the Phillies have really – they haven't run away with things. Now, they've had injuries. You know, Jimmy Rollins hasn't been there most of the year, but, you know, they haven't scored, and it's I don't know if he makes that much of a difference. They're a different team this year. They're much less powerful offensively. Maybe that'll change, but You know, and Washington has always been a team. We see them in the spring, too. They've been a team that I've always been kind of afraid of because when they put it together, I think they're going to go on a pretty good run. And now that they have Strasburg there and, you know, they're starting to pick things up a little bit, I'd watch out for them because they have a dangerous lineup. If they ever get the pitching set, they could really be, you know, be really in the mix in the East. So Florida's tough, too, you know. I think it's going to be one of those divisions that doesn't take a lot of wins over, you know, over 80 or so to win. So, you know, that probably helps the Mets. There's no question about that. Might take them out of the wild card
right.
A little bit simply if you, you know, if everyone's knocking off each other. But they'll be in things for sure.
Maybe the Nats have Bryce Harper up by September. Just kidding, Eddie.
If they do, that's trouble. That's trouble.
All right, buddy. I enjoyed it. Thanks for the great job you do on WFAN covering the Mets. Listen to you all the time. I appreciate your time today, and go get them down in Baltimore.
All right, Chris. Always good talking to you.
All right.
Good luck, okay?
Thanks a lot, Eddie.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
Want to have your voice heard? Leave a comment or question on the Yankees and anything else sports-related for Chris at 646-487-3668. And now, back to Off the Wall.
And welcome back once again to the Off the Wall, a very busy Off the Wall,
yeah.
Guest-heavy.
Very guest-heavy today, which is always a good thing.
Yes, never a bad thing. So thanks again to Jim Cott and also Eddie Coleman of WFAN. Jim Cott, of course, Major League Baseball
Network. Yep.
As you heard, giving us great stuff on Steven Strasburg and, of course, the New York Metropolitans. You could hear Eddie on WFAN, and once again, you could see Jim Cott on a limited number of games. We wish it would be more because Jim is very good at what he does.
Yes, he is.
So just look out for him on the MLB Network and look out for Eddie Coleman at WFAN and also WFAN.com. If you want to get involved in the podcast, you can give us a ring at 646-487-3668 or email us at offthewall@yesnetwork.com. We have the technology now to get guests. So, having said that, we will be bringing you more entertaining and more, well, not that we're not entertaining, Joe.
Right, no, but yes.
And we do bring some knowledge to the table. But when you have people who are actually out in the field and close to the teams, close to the players, like you are when you go to the stadium, and you're doing that in just a little bit for interleague play against the Astros. We just want to get you the best possible podcast, and that's what we did today by bringing you Jim Cott talking about Steven Strasburg, who we heard a lot of good things about.
Yeah, Jim Cott, you know, announced that first game
yes,
of Strasburg,
yes,
so that's why
and also,
it was a good get.
And also Ed Coleman, Eddie Coleman, of course, on the New York Mets. So we didn't talk about the Yankees yet, so let's talk about the Yankees. 2 out of 3 in Baltimore, they start interleague play against the Astros, then they have the Phillies and the Mets.
Yeah.
The Yankees, this part of the schedule has been very nice to them, unlike May, which was a team after team over 500.
Right.
And they got through it. I mean, you gotta put it this way, especially the Yankee fans on Twitter. You have to put everything into perspective. Are the Yankees 2 games out of first place? Are they behind the Rays? Yes. But listen to all the injuries. Posada, Swisher missed a couple of games. Granderson was out pretty much a month,
mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. David Robertson missed some time.
Aceves is still out.
Aceves is still out. And they're still just 2 games out of first place.
There is a little bit of concern coming out of this
six-game
road trip. Yeah, I mean, they did go 3-3, and it wasn't good to see that Alex Rodriguez left the game with the groin injury. But, you know, it's one of those things where I did a Pinstripe Weekly with Glenn Gingrandi, and he mentioned if this is going to become a nagging thing for Alex, maybe the best thing to do is just have him rest it for a couple of days. You know, you don't want to talk about DL, but, you know, just have him sit out in the meantime. I just don't know the extent of the injury
yet.
Between
you and me and everybody listening to this podcast, I really don't think he has to play against the Astros. I really think 3 days against the Astros, Alex could be just getting treatment and relaxing and not worrying.
Putting Ramiro Pena at third.
Putting Ramiro Pena at third. You know, you're winning games regardless with Pena and Russo,
right,
and guys like that in the lineup. So why not? Just let them have the time off. This is not September. The Yankees aren't fighting.
I mean, Curtis Granderson's been hitting well. Posada's in a little bit of a funk, and Cano is just, he's raking
Tony
right
Pena,
now.
Though, as we heard on the broadcast last night, Michael Casey, him and Kenny Singleton down in Baltimore, Tony Pena is giving him a workout.
Yeah.
They're trying to get him back into catching shape with all the drills he's working with him. So that could be, as Kenny said, affecting his swing.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't know that. We tried to get Tony Pena on the podcast. He was busy. We couldn't get him on. But maybe sometime down the line we could talk to Tony about that. Joe's going to the stadium. Maybe he could just corner him, and we'll get that information to you on the podcast next week. Joe will definitely try to do that. But the Yankees are in good shape where they are right now. True, they welcome in the Phillies next week, you know, a World Series rematch, which I think is stupid because they're two different teams now. So it's not really a rematch. It's just a rematch of the team names.
And you know, the other thing is the Phillies come in struggling mightily with
absolutely.
Their offense.
You heard Ed Coleman say it. They've had injuries. They're not scoring. You know, Roy Halladay loses 2-0, loses 2-1. Yeah. They were shut out three straight games by the Mets.
He's 8-4, and he's had one bad start.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
He must be saying to himself, I can't win. I'm on the Blue Jays, and I allow, you know, two runs, one run, and I lose. I go to the Phillies, who have Ryan Howard, Jason Worth, and Chase Utley, and they're not scoring any runs.
Think about this one, Chris. You know, he gets traded from the Blue Jays because all these years they haven't been contenders, and this year they're playing at a very high level, and their pitching staff is very good.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's a wild situation.
And those young pitchers on the Blue Jays benefited from having Halladay... Yeah. On that team, because yeah. I'm sure they picked his brain. And let's face it, he's one of the best pitchers in the game, if not the best pitcher in the game right now.
Yeah.
Besides Mr. Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah.
Because he is just...
He's balling.
He is dominating everyone. But that's another topic for another podcast. Anyway, getting back to the Yankees, right now as it stands on the Friday before they start the three-game set with the Astros, 14 games over 500, 37 up, 23 down. They are 19-7 at home, 18-16 on the road, and they're in good position, Joe. I mean, as we brought up, the injuries that they've had to be 14 games over 500, to have Phil Hughes going the way he's going. We heard Eddie Coleman talk about Mike Pelfrey. Phil Hughes is having a kind of a, oh, that's how you do it year.
Right, right.
So you have that going for you. You have Andy Pettit off to the best start of his career. He's going to be 38 next week.
I know.
And he's 7-1 with an ERA over just over 2.
It's, 2.47 right now, which is amazing.
Just under 2.5, excuse me. But just unbelievable stuff going on with the Yankees this season. I know you don't want them to be in second place. You don't want to be looking up at the Rays. But that's just the way it is right now. We're not even to the All-Star break yet. Pazienza, as we say in Italian. Patience. Patience, everyone. It'll happen. The Yankees are going to be around. They are probably in... Check, Joe, the AL East. We talked about the NL East with Ed Coleman, which could compete with the AL East come down the line if the Nationals do get for real. Okay?
Right.
Look at this. The Rays are 39-21. Yankees, as I said, 37-23. The Red Sox are 35-27. And the Blue Jays are 34-27.
And the Baltimore Orioles are everybody's whipping boy.
The Baltimore Orioles
are
the bird poo on the windshield of Major League Baseball.
It's really bad right now. I mean, it's a sad situation.
Did they beat the Yankees? Yes. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
Yeah.
It happens. They are just, it's awful to watch.
Yeah.
It is.
It's not good baseball. But look, you're right. This division is very tight, very competitive. Like I said, the Blue Jays have guys like Brett Cecil and Brendan Morrow pitching well for them. Ricky Romero. I mean, these are good pitchers right now. And it's coming from everybody. The Red Sox offense.
Not to mention
Ortiz is back. I mean, there's different stories on each team.
The Blue Jays offense has the most home runs in the league.
Yeah.
Just tearing the cover
Alex
off
Gonzalez,
the ball.
Jose Bautista. I mean, these are guys that are just playing.
Jose Bautista never had over 16 home runs in any year in his career.
Now he's got 18. So it's just amazing.
It's not even the All-Star break.
Yes.
But taking a look at the NL East, what Eddie brought up, Eddie Coleman from WFAN, Atlanta's 35-26, Phillies are 31-27, the Mets are 32-28, the Nationals are 30-31, and the Marlins are 29-31. They almost have everybody at 500 or over 500 in that division. So you can make an argument that the NL East is just as competitive, might not be as good as the AL East, but just as competitive as the
agree.
American League East.
I would agree. It's both Eastern divisions are really, it's good races so far. Very good race. In fact, all the divisions have been pretty good so far. I mean, you look at, you know, the AL West, which is a terrible division. I'm sorry if I have offended any Texas Rangers fans. But look, the Rangers are in first. The Angels are in second, only 1.5 back. And the A's are 2.5 back. The Mariners stink. But look, you look at the Central. The Twins are in first place. The Tigers are right there, 4.5 back.
Just a game over 500.
Yeah, and the White Sox
are... White Sox are 7 under. Yeah. Royals are 11 under. And the Indians are 13 under.
In the AL, you just have to say that the four best teams right now are in the AL East.
They are.
You could put the Twins there, but the Twins can't hit in their own ballpark right now. So, you know... The NL East is very competitive, and the AL East, to me, has the four best teams in the league.
I can't disagree with that at all. The NL Central, pretty much like the AL Central, Cubbies, Brewers, Astros, and Pirates are all under 500. The Cardinals and the Reds, believe it or not, the front-running Reds, mm-hmm. at the top of the NL Central, 35 and 26. So I think they're for real, too. They're pitching.
Good young pitching.
Pitching.
And everybody seems to forget, too, that, you know, Edinson Volquez is coming back off of – who knows what's going to happen with him. But,
yeah, his 50-game suspension.
You know, I mean, they're getting good young pitching. And you go over to the West, and you got the Dodgers in first, which is not a shock, but the Padres are right there. The Giants.
They're right there.
They're right there.
The Rockies, don't ever count out the Rockies. And you know what? The Diamondbacks are 12.5 back, but I wouldn't count them out either.
This division could flip-flop.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But, like I said, going back to the Yankees, they're in a position right now where they're two back. This A-Rod issue is a little touch and go right now. We'll see what happens with it. I know he went to go see doctors today. But, you know, Teixeira's got to start hitting, too. Once he starts hitting.
Brought that up 3 weeks ago.
He's got to start hitting.
I don't think anyone heard it anywhere until we said it on this podcast, until we called him out and we gave you those statistics.
Yeah, I mean... He's got to start.
Has he had a couple of games where he goes, he gets three hits, then he gets another two hits, and then he disappears again?
It's not.
I don't know what it is. I'd love to pick Kevin Long's brain about it too.
The one thing I'd love to say is, I'd love to say one thing to all Yankee fans that were, you know, talking a big game. Where's your criticism of Javi Vasquez these days? I want to know.
Hey.
I want to know.
Go back and listen to my podcast. You know I was a fan. I know you were a fan. You were a fan since he signed the contract.
I'm just saying, you know,
it goes back to what I said to Eddie
Baseball
Coleman.
Baseball is cyclical.
And it goes back to what I brought up with Eddie Coleman. New York fans, and I'm talking about people who like New York teams all over the country, transplanted New Yorkers, the most knowledgeable. You always hear New York fans are the most knowledgeable. You people aren't the most patient. And in a 162-game season over 6 months, you have to pace yourself. Javi Vasquez is 5-5. He was 5-7 last year, ended up 15-10. That means he went 10-3 on the back half of the season.
That's enough said.
And Dave Island said it, and I said it on this podcast. He said he had no doubt that he would turn things around. And who am I going to listen to? People on Twitter? Or the pitching coach for the New York Yankees. Listening to the pitching coach of the New York Yankees because he's in the bullpen doing the side sessions with them. He's not sitting at a computer watching the games and just making these rash decisions, split-second decisions after he gives up a home run. I'm sure I wasn't following Twitter, his start against the Blue Jays, when he had a no-hitter into the sixth. I'm positive when he gave up that home run to Vernon Wells, people were killing him.
There were a couple people.
The guy had a no-hitter.
Yeah, there were a couple people killing him.
Can't win. John Sterling said it the best. Can't win if you don't score. It's that simple. If you have a no-hitter into the sixth and your offense isn't producing, what are you supposed to do? He kept the Yankees in the game. That's his job. It's been his job all season. Has he done it all season? No. He's had some real clunkers.
Mm-hmm.
Some lemon law starts. Absolutely. But you got to give the guy time. And now he's 500.
I agree, Chris. So my message today is just get through this interleague. The Yankees usually play, you know, well in interleague.
Unlike last year, the bulk of this part of the schedule is home.
Is home.
It's not a nine-game, you know, National League trip.
Right, they're
where your
home.
Pitchers
so,
hitting all the time.
You know, it's this is you know enjoy interleague play. When you get through this, you know the Astros. On paper, the Yankees should beat the Astros. I mean, there's Pettit's going tonight against Brett Myers. I mean, that's advantage Yankees. These are games the Yankees should win. You know, the Phillies are not scoring right now. The Yankees might be getting the Phillies
at the right time.
And, you know, as we spoke with Eddie C., the Mets are playing well, but, you know, are they playing up to the Yankees' caliber? We're gonna learn a lot about these Mets, I think, in the series against the Yankees. And then it's Arizona. This is a stretch where the Yankees could get very fat. And then it's going to be interesting with the Dodgers.
It's
crazy.
Thank God that circus will be out in L.A.
Yeah.
Thank God. So, you know what that stadium would have been like if the Dodgers were here?
Yes.
You know what the series would have been like last year if it was against the Dodgers?
Yes, I know.
It wouldn't have been about the Yankees. It would have been about Joe Torre. That's why I'm so glad the Phillies won the National League Championship Series. Anyway, we're going to end it on that note. A very busy podcast today. Much thanks again. Go out to Jim Cott and Eddie C. from WFAN, Eddie Coleman, of course. And another big thanks go out to the producer of this show, Joe Oriema, because he's the one that got the guests together. He did a tremendous job, and I thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to make sure you heard those two little words.
Oh.
That means so much.
Thank you.
So thank you very much to Joe. We will be back next week. Hopefully we'll line up a couple more guests for you. Maybe we'll get some Yankees on, talk a little Yankee baseball with a member of the New York Yankees. How about that? We'll see you next week here on the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com. When the world is on your shoulder, gotta straighten up your act and boogie down. If you can't hang with the feeling, then there ain't no room for you in this part of town. Cause we're the party people night and day. Living crazy, that's the only way. So tonight, gotta leave the 9-to-5 up on the shelf. Just enjoy yourself, groove. Let the madness and the music get to you. Life ain't so bad at all. You live it off the wall. Life ain't so